Welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is poet Michael Jennings. Jennings was born in the French Quarter of New Orleans and grew up in East Texas and the deserts of southwestern Iran. He attended the University of Pennsylvania and Syracuse University, and his work has been published in many journals, including the Comstock Review and Stone Canoe. He is the author of 11 collections of poetry, including his most recent, Summoning the Outlaws. It's a gorgeous and haunting new collection published by Kelsey Books. And welcome to the show. Nice to see you again.
Thank you much. Nice to be here.
Now, Summoning the Outlaws is a vivid portrayal of the legends and colorful characters of the American West. What prompted you to tackle this subject?
Well, I sort of backed into it. I had a friend, a poet friend, who for years nagged me to write about Texas. And I said, well, you know, I left Texas when I was so young. I don't think I have much to say. But when I had some time, I started doing a few Texas poems from my own experience. And what I discovered is that I was sort of re-entering child mind, and child mind is kind of myth mind. So I thought, why don't I also explore the sort of fantasy heroes of my youth, the guys that I read about in places like the Frontier Times. Mm. And
so you're talking about famous outlaws, right, for the most part. That's
for the
what the
most
book
part,
focuses
exactly.
on, yeah.
So that's how I started exploring that area, and the Indians seemed to me to be, you know, outlaws as well.
Oh, yeah.
So I just sort of explored people that I had thought about in my youth. And
I find it totally fascinating. You know, you said that you used some photos to go into this realm,
well,
right?
Actually, 40 years ago, I did a series of poems based on the photographs of Dorothea Lange.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was trying to make it from my sort of Iran background and create something like an American poem. And I wrote this series based on her photographs. And when I started doing these, I thought, you know, they sort of belong in a manuscript together as kind of Americana poems.
Mm-hmm.
Which was ironic for me because I spent so many years in Iran that I thought I'd never get around to being a really American poet.
Oh, that's interesting. God, you've embodied the characters in this so well. And I know all those pictures from Dorothea Lange, too. And I was feeling these vivid memories of looking at those as a kid, too. You know what I wanted to ask you about, too? There's so much violence in those early days in the American West. Do you think that helped instill the optimism we have? I don't understand how we came to that optimism after such a violent beginning.
Well, I've had a lot of sort of mythic ideas about how you have to pour blood on the land to, you know, that to create the future. The West was violent. To me, American history really kind of starts with the West because you have the conjunction of the South American ranchero. You have the horse culture.
Oh, yeah.
And you have the gun culture, which in its pistol form is new. I mean, it really came out of the Civil War. Prior to that, there wasn't much, you know, I think it was Colt was asked to invent a pistol to be able to fight the Comanches back in like 1835. And he created a 35-millimeter bullet pistol that really wasn't powerful. And it wasn't until the Civil War that they built these really hand cannons.
Mm-hmm. So you could see the connection then between
optimism
and the violence, you know,
well,
or,
I don't know,
or the creation,
the
perhaps. Yeah.
It seems there has to be bloodletting to
almost
to
like
go
a cleansing,
forward.
Huh?
Right,
I think it's kind
right.
of a cleansing. Well, I want to have you read from Summoning the Outlaws. This first poem is called The Road West, New Mexico, 1938. Tell us a tiny bit about it before you read it.
Well, I think that's Highway 66. I've been on that. If you go west from Texas, that's where you go. It's hot, and it's straight and kind of unrelenting. And I don't know what led me quite, but it's a Dorothea Lange photograph, so I decided to give it a shot. The Road West, New Mexico, 1938. This is the Road West. It runs between desert and desert and darkens at the edges. But the center is bright and runs straight up to heaven. If you come by an ear of corn, think Indian, call it maize, shuck it. Try thinking of your brain pan as artifact. From this, they can rebuild cities. Make peace with the sun, but don't trust him. His power is illusory. He'll give you a headache. Woonight, his mistress. She'll lend you her blanket, though her fingers are cold. Mercury and water are elements to remember. Gold turns to salt, the sea salt to ashes. If you come by skulls, think loaves of bread. If you come under a cloud, consider yourself lucky. Smoke on the horizon means someone has spoken. If small towns seem empty, remember the silence. If you reach the Pacific, don't take it lightly. There are fires in Egypt. This is the Road West. The dots go by like eyes.
Oh, I love that, Michael. It felt like it set the whole scene, too.
Right?
I mean, it felt like it set the whole scene for this collection. Doing this collection of poetry, did it bring in anything new that you hadn't thought about in regard to the West or early American culture?
I had to read a fair amount to go into a little more depths of some of these people. I didn't read a lot of books, but I guess one of the things that occurred to me as I was writing it was that so much of the values of these outlaws, Indian, whatever, were essentially warrior values, very similar to the Greeks. Mm-hmm. So when I wrote a poem about Red Cloud, I conjured sort of Greek mythology to depict him. That there's a lot to be said for warrior values. The dark side is that it can flip into racist values,
Absolutely.
That's the dark side of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what I felt while I was reading this collection? That you were somehow connecting with a bunch of ghosts.
Well, they are, yeah. I think I was sort of connecting with the ghosts of myself, my 8 and 9 year old self, where some of these poems kind of came from, and with the ghosts of that place. You know, I grew up watching Westerns and things, so it was, it is sort of about conjuring ghosts.
Yeah. You keep talking about how you're conjuring up something from your childhood. I don't feel that in this book.
Well, that's good. That's good.
It feels like an adult, coming to terms almost with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a look back. The last poems in a section, I think, called Alma's House is sort of directly autobiographical, but the others are just things that I rubbed up against.
Mm-hmm. You know? How did you approach writing this? Was it something that you wrote in one piece and just sort of in a fury?
I wrote quite a number of the Texas poems. Then I got the idea of writing the poems would just sort of fall out. And then once they had fallen out, I would think, well, I should really write about this guy then.
Mm.
And if I've done that, then I should probably take on this guy.
So you started developing a theme right away, it sounds like.
Yeah, for me, poetry is about getting free, though you're working with constraint to get free. And so once you get into a poem, you feel somewhat constrained until you can break through and get out of it, and then you feel free again, and then you feel another burden coming. I always liked Mailer when he was asked if he liked to write. He said, no, I don't like to write. But I liked having written. He said it was like indigestion. You have to kind of get it out.
Yeah, and then we all have to give ourselves permission to look back.
Yep.
You know, and poetry brings out the beauty in it instead of just the horror, black and white story.
Right.
Now I want to have you read another from Summoning the Outlaws. This one's called The Great Plains Near Winter, South Dakota, 1938. I found this poem incredibly haunting.
Well, it happened. You know, poems come in such odd windows. And I had heard a story about people being snowbound and snowblind and hearing bells, but because of the way the sound bounced off the snow, not being able to find their way. And I stopped at a red light in Syracuse at some point and thought, I want to end a poem with bells. That's all I knew. Mm. And then I stumbled on this photo, and it all kind of came together. So this is called On the Great Plains Near Winter, South Dakota, 1938. On the Great Plains near Winter, South Dakota, winters are long, philosophy is short. What goes under snow in November emerges again in March, sometimes later. Sometimes changed. Life's hard. Daughters get names like hope or faith. Sons don't get far or move away altogether, their letters coming back full of the emptiness they left with. And here in the space of what looks like half a mile, maybe less, three churches stand, one behind the other, like reflections of the same church, each painted white. Each with its single black spire thrust into the northern sky. Nothing else stands or grows, but the prairie grass moving away like a whisper. But distance can be tricky here, so that the church that stands near the horizon may be a day's walk, maybe farther. And in deep snow, the situation worsens. Destinations are measured in yards or feet, sometimes inches. Direction, too, can be confusing. A man goes snowblind quickly in a blizzard. Sound distorts. The mind grows muddled. It is said in the desert, a man never dies of thirst, but he will first see water. Here it is said, a man never freezes to death, but he can hear the ringing of bells. Huh.
That's gorgeous. Yeah, it really is. Now, you know, you've mentioned that you were brought up in different areas like New Orleans and Iraq and Iran. And did you think you had dreams of the American West like this, and you're sort of fulfilling a childhood fantasy in that way? Because there are so many myths, and most of them come from films.
Right. Well, when I was an undergraduate considering being a poet, I read Anatomy of Criticism by Northrop Frye, who said, after irony, we return to myth. Mm. And I thought, thank God, because I'm really bored by irony. So that sort of started me off. And growing up in a place like Iran, the landscape is mythic. The people are mythic, you know. So, and I think the soul knows itself mythically. So I'm drawn to mythic things, you know.
Well, the perfect place to go to the West.
Right,
which is
exactly.
Where I'm from. You know, I'm from California.
Oh, so, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so I'm, this book really touched me.
That's terrific.
In many different ways. Did you think your book adds to the myths of this era, or were you trying to deal with more realism? How did you approach it in that way?
Well, there's the myth, and there's history. And at one point in the Billy the Kid poem, I realized I had actually confused a memory. And then I thought, well, memory confounded by dream is sort of what myth is.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So I wanted to, you know, the ex-poet laureate of Texas said of the book that, you know, I sort of told the truth about the romanticized West. And I think that's partly true. So, you know, it's an edge. The mythic energy, but also the countervailing truth, some, you know, sort of mix in the poems. Mm-hmm. You know, I did try to tell the truth about these characters, the truth so far as I could dredge it up and find it.
Yeah, yeah. And truth comes out very beautiful in poetry.
Right.
I think that's
right.
How we're able to deal with it, don't you?
It maybe is the only vehicle. That I think that's what all poets know, is that truth actually only exists in one time, in one place, in one moment, and that's a poem. You know, that...
Yeah, exactly, yeah. I did find this collection really quite something.
I'm delighted.
Really is effective. Now, I want to have you read another from Summoning the Outlaws, Bad Men of the Old West.
This is sort of comes from a composite of photographs that had kind of haunted me through much of my life. I was always sort of fascinated with the way society justifies itself by creating its outlaws and then killing them or whatever. So this is Bad Men of the Old West. They are mostly skinny men with big eyes and scuzzy beards who died ragged in holy socks with so many bullet holes in their bodies you can hardly count them. And yet their memento mori photographs, in which they are propped up by the grim townsfolk, are laid out in a buckboard or an undertaker's slab, startle us with the banality of their quietude after so much violence. We have killed here the devil's spawn, the photographs seem to say. Here are the wages of sin, and we are neither proud nor sorry. They passed through like any spell of bad weather, and we went back to our commonplace lives in our kitchens and on our front porches and wrote ballads and dime novels about them as if they were anything but poor, angry men gone astray, imagining them all steely-nerved and remorseless, pretending we never killed them.
If you're just joining us, my guest is poet Michael Jennings, and we're discussing his new collection, Summoning the Outlaws. That poem is, that ending is absolutely, that feels like the West to me. It almost feels like nobody took responsibility for some of the horror that went
haunted.
On.
I remember when I was, you know, 6 or 7 years, I saw a pen and ink drawing of Captain Kidd hanging on a yardarm. And I became sort of obsessed with public execution. It seemed very unnerving and kind of, and that whole relationship between the, you know, to me, taking a larger view, outlawry is usually about an employment problem.
Yeah, I suppose you could put it that way.
Robin Hood's day on.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If you didn't have any other, you know, you became a bandit.
Yeah, just to survive.
Right.
Wow. Okay, I hadn't thought of it that way. Now, did you come away changed at all by writing this book and in regard to your feelings about the West or even feelings about yourself as an American?
Well, I think I intuited as a place to go. Once the poems were made, I felt sort of fulfilled by it. I was only changed insofar as this vague dream had become print and paper.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if it really changed. It was, but it gave form to something that sort of floated around like a cloud in my head.
But as you were doing research, did it change any of your ideas? You keep invoking the childhood visions of some of these times.
No, I think it was realizing how much it was about a warrior culture and a gun culture and about a certain kind of freedom. And also, I mean, you know, for instance, one of the ironies I unearthed is the governor who betrayed Billy the Kid by promising him amnesty and then reneging on it and so on, became America's leading literary light within several years by writing Ben-Hur, A Tale of the Christ. Mm. And, of course, he made Billy into a Christ. I mean, you know, so I discovered little ironies that way, little twitches of fact that, you know, make you do a kind of double take.
Yeah. You know what I was thinking, too? I mean, we've seen so many films and portrayals of some of these people like Billy the Kid. It almost feels like that you've created another version somehow, and it feels real. It feels like another true version.
I'm glad.
But who are these people, since we have so many versions, I was thinking.
Right. Well, you know, part of the problem of being a poet in our culture is, unlike many previous cultures, we don't have that many common myths to relate, you know, that the poet can kind of plug into. And I realized the West is something that almost all Americans have some sense of. So it's a kind of fertile place to interact with a reader.
Yeah. And to carry on other ideas with these as focus.
Right.
Yeah, which I find fascinating, too. Now, I want to have you read one more from Summoning the Outlaws. This one's called Ghost Dance, 1890.
Yeah. This is one of the horror stories of our relationship with Native Americans. And it's, you know, it's a true story. Ghost Dance, 1890. We wanted them to live in square boxes, while everything they loved was round, like the world. Most found farming a farce. They got Jesus, but not the white people who brought him. They decided to dance them away, the square-footeds. Dance so the iron horse would die in its tracks. Dance the return of the limitless grasses and their hooved brothers and sisters. Dance the return of rivers to their true names and earth free again of hoarders and marauders. And then they were slaughtered in a circle of blue coats for dancing.
Wow. Yeah, and that was another thing that this brought up for me, too. I mean, we don't portray the American Indian, particularly as a whole portrait, you know what I mean? We put them in the myths and we talk about how we slaughtered them and to create our wonderful world, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, some people have argued that it's the biggest unacknowledged genocide in history. You know, I don't know how many millions were wiped out. So, you know, along with slavery, it's our original sin, you know, and it colors everything.
And we created such tales from this slaughter.
Well, someone pointed out that the Wild West show of Buffalo Bill was a neat trick because it always featured the cavalry coming in to rescue the white people from the Indians, whereas, in fact, it was the Indians who needed rescuing from the white people.
Exactly. Oh.
So we just sort of turned the reality on its head.
Yeah. Oh. This is such a deep and beautiful collection. Does it prompt you to want to write another collection of a themed book?
Well, I've always tended to write poems in series. So this was a bit of an unexpected fork in the road as far as getting a series out of that particular quadrant of my imagination. I've just started something else, but it's far too really vague to talk about. Two things have to happen. I have to sort of have this ghostly sense of what's possible, and then it's about discovering a language that allows that to start to take shape. And I'm just at the edge of both, kind of. You know, I've kind of got the shadowy shape, but I have to play to find that language to give that cloud a shape.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have to give yourself permission, or you just haven't landed on it yet, or?
Right. Well, I have to find it. I'm sort of going back in. I've started with one of the earliest recollections I have of being terrified of a steam engine in a station when I was like 3 years old. And it's just a little piece, and I'm trying to figure out the scope of the poems, you know, how much you want them to be microscopic, accurate, and how much you want to free float things in and out from different times and spaces. Mm-hmm. So that's what I mean about getting a language and it's a kind of way of painting it.
Yeah, yeah. And poets do want to invoke beauty.
Right.
No matter what the subject matter, right? I mean, looking for especially beautiful language.
I have to be following a music for it to really work my imagination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, we are almost out of time. Can you tell me what else are you working on besides the thing that you mentioned that isn't formed yet?
Well, I have another book coming out that is called Where She Dances. That's sort of a two-parter that has almost all the poems I ever wrote about Iran. And then the second half is also sort of a cosmic, mythic set of love poems that weave in and out of a more garden environment. So the first has to do with a very harsh landscape, the second with a very lush. But the women are kind of in both.
Mm. Yeah, the gritty myth of love.
Right, right.
That's what it sounds like to me. Can you give people some contact information?
Well, MichaelJenningsPoetry.com is my website. And that's probably the best access people have.
Oh, that's great. Any readings coming up that we can mention?
Actually, I haven't planned any readings. We had such a long, cruel winter.
Oh, absolutely.
We're sort of just getting out from under enough to. I think come fall I'll start querying for readings. But you reach my age, and I'm not in all that much of a hurry.
I would think at our ages we would be in a hurry.
Well, I mean, I'm in a hurry to get it created. I don't know. I mean, it would be nice to get it out there, but it's harder and harder to get good reading venues.
Exactly.
I'm not really connected to any real network.
Yeah. Well, the writers have to be by themselves, right?
Right. Well, I think, yeah.
Yeah, instead of trying to work with a group. Summoning the Outlaws is available where around here? Is it at Buffalo Street Books?
I have no idea, but it's easily gotten on Amazon.
Okay.
Which is probably the easiest access.
Well, Michael Jennings, this has been a pleasure, and the book is absolutely terrific. I hope people will go out and buy it. My guest has been Michael Jennings. Thank you much.
Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega, and we are a sponsored project of the New York Foundation for the Arts. Tax-deductible donations are welcome at artspire.org. That's artspire.org. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. I'm Tish Perlman. We'll be back next week.